Let's begin with the gear process in drying halacha, and then we'll extend to where today the gear process stands. We have a period of King David, King Solomon. The Jewish kingdom is flourishing. There's a lot of wealth. There's a lot of people are prospering, and people are happy to be Jewish, happy to be part of the Jewish state. The Jewish court rules, we don't accept ger, because now it's too appealing to become a ger for external purposes. No acceptance of ger. The time of the Messiah, when things will be good for the Jewish people, and we won't be under foreign nations. So, same ruling applies. We don't accept ger. And anyone who hasn't joined by then doesn't get to join. So, the gear process really begins with an assumption that it's not too enticing to be a Jew. When looked at from the outside, what do you see Jews do? You see they're constricted as far as what actions they may take, what foods they may eat, what people they may marry, what times they may work, when they may be with their wives. There are a lot of constrictions. And to an outsider, it isn't appealing. I want to work. I make money by working. My competition works on Shabbos. They work on Pesach. Here comes this religion and tells me don't work, and there's no compromise. Like one person said, where in our lives do we have something that's as finite as Shabbos? There is a minute at which you may not work. End of the story. When that sunset comes, you can't say, well, in 2 minutes I'll finish shaving. Finished. 3 minutes prior to sunset, you really have to stop. 5 minutes, because we don't know exactly when sunset is. So there's a minute when you cannot work. What else in life constricts us that way? And when one views it, firstly, just the laws of the religion, it's not attractive. One of the first things that people want is I want to do what I want. And Judaism says, no, you're going to do what the religion says, what God has told us to do. And you don't have to be a Jew. And if I don't have to be a Jew, so why should I? I could be a perfectly good non-Jew. I have my 7 Noachad laws, I'll be a good person. Why should I take on all these obligations? Why should I have to constrict myself when I'm traveling in all kinds of countries? I can't walk into any restaurant I want. It's much easier not being Jewish. Why should I have to wear a kippah? Why should I have to wear tzitzit? Why should I have to check garments? I like Giorgio Armani. I like both. I like Italian stuff. So they use linen with their wool. What do I care? I like those suits. Well, I'm entitled to like those suits. If I'm not Jewish, I'm entitled to wear those suits. If I'm Jewish, I'm going to have to check them for shatness. Not exactly attractive. If I'm going to a bar and there's a good-looking girl, I want to go out with her. Maybe I want to do more than go out with her. Comes Judaism and says, no. If she's Jewish, you may go out with her. You may only go out with her in a modest fashion. If she's the right girl, then you have to take a period of time before you marry her. Only at certain times that you be with her. Who's running my life? The Torah tells us things as minuscule as when we have to wake up, we have to say Shema at a certain time. It means you can't sleep late. There's a limit to what time you can sleep. So at every minute of our lives, we have the Torah telling us what to do. So on the surface, it's not supposed to be too attractive. And with time, being a Jew became even less attractive. The Jews have been persecuted throughout the generations. I always tell guys who are considering Gators, think about it 100 times. Because today you see a Jewish state. No one gave us a guarantee this Jewish state will remain. And the state of a Jew has always been to be on the run, to be persecuted. And if a person could avoid entering it, why should he enter? I don't know if I were in any person's shoes if I would enter. I honestly don't know. Because anyone who studies history knows that it's been bitter to be a Jew. It's been persecution. Even today, Jews travel throughout Europe. They get detained in many airports. You can see many articles written about it. Simply for the fact they're a Jew. They can have their passport taken away and suddenly no one knows. No one took it. There are many stories in many countries throughout Europe. If you think anti-Semitism is dead, it's not true. It's under cover now. But we don't know where the winds are blowing. No one guarantees us where the world is headed. We see more and more open remarks against Jews, be it Carter, be it the president of Iran. Wherever you turn, you'll see that the anti-Semitism is rampant. And it's only growing. In the Far East, children are still taught that on Passover, Jews sacrifice a non-Jewish child. So we know there's no validation for it. It was never done. They were just blood libels. You'd think in the 21st century, no one would be telling that. But you ask the average child growing up in the Far Eastern countries, that's what they're learning. The Arabs are learning that we're all murderers. And there are many, many books being written about how the Jews are running the world. There are many people who believe it. It's not like the world is a pleasant place to be a Jew. Today we live here in Israel and we get a certain sense of security. No one promises us that that security is true or that it will remain. And throughout history it was worse. Anyone who lived anywhere knew how dirty a Jew was. Shakespeare lived in England during a period where the Jews were banished a few years prior to his birth, and there wasn't a Jew in England throughout his life, and yet he could write The Merchant of Venice. He knows how untrustworthy a Jew is. He probably never saw a Jew in his life, but he knows what a Jew is. I don't remember. Okay. Bottom line, he grew up in an England that was purged of Jews, and yet it was very clear to him who in his story would be the mean, vicious one who stands on a pound of flesh. Everyone knew that it wasn't good to be a Jew. And if someone came forward and said, I want to become a ger, so the first thing we told him is, and we still tell him is, why would you want to do that to yourself? And it's not a game, it's a real question. And it's a question from many angles. It's a question both as far as the obligations. Before a person takes on the obligations, he could be a very good person, and in heaven he'll get rewards for all the little things that he's doing good, because he's being a good person, contributing to the world. Why would a person want to take on so many obligations? You don't live up to the obligations, you'll be taken to task. Today you don't have to keep Shabbos. You cannot keep Shabbos. Person becomes a ger, now he's responsible to learn and keep Shabbos. We don't expect that the first day after a person walks out of the mikveh he knows all the halachos, but we do expect that it will be a learning process, which is a point to take to heart. People very often feel like, I did it. I got to the mikveh, I'm a Jew. And that's just a starting point. That's not the ending point. We don't teach a person everything before the mikveh. It's impossible. You have to make up what people have learned and seen from the time they were 2 years old, in 1 year, in 2 years, in 4 years. It's impossible. And the halacha doesn't expect it. The halacha expects that he'll know basics. And he will know that I will not know everything and I will not understand everything. One of the basics when it comes to becoming a ger is knowing that you will not understand everything. With time you understand more, but you're never going to understand everything. There are a lot of mitzvahs that we perform we don't understand. You ask me why we're tefillin in the morning, so the Torah says it's a remembrance of our exit of Egypt. That's true, it's all very nice. Bottom line, I don't know why we're tefillin in the morning. I know I wear tefillin because the Torah says to wear tefillin, and I know that in some way it's supposed to remind me of the fact that God took us out of Egypt. But do I understand why it has to be square, why it has to be black, why it has to have straps, why it has to have a knot that shapes like a dalit, why it has to have three crevices that look like a shin, what the purpose of it is, why on the head it has to have four boxes, on the arm it has to have one box? I don't understand it. I don't know. Does it make a difference? Why does the parchment have to be from a pure animal? Why does it have to be wrapped with the hair of a pure animal? Who cares? I don't know. God told me to do it, I do it. I don't know what. And many mitzvahs are that way. There are many things that if we'd use our own logic, we'd say, well, Shabbos is very nice, but I have to honor my parents. My grandmother's in an old age home. Why don't I go visit her on Shabbos? There are many mitzvahs which our own logic would say, let's make compromises this way or that way. I want to go to shul. Now, many people email me, people who did gear here or people who learned here, and then they go back to Europe, and they live in a community where they don't have an Orthodox shul nearby. And they say, well, what can I do? So we try to arrange things for them, but bottom line, you can't get into a car and drive to shul on Shabbos. No, you cannot. And a person says, but I don't feel like I have a Jewish community, so we have to work on it and figure out how to arrange a Jewish community for him. But he still cannot hop into a car and drive to shul on Shabbos. Otherwise, laws of kashrut. I often tell the story, my brother was in a very difficult university. And, things became tougher and tougher and tougher. And all his friends were studying on Shabbos, studying on Sunday, working their heads off. And at one point, one of the guys came over to him and he said, you know, I went over to my priest. I said, Father, look, I've always attended Sunday, the church. I've always been here and I've been very careful. I've made my confession, given my donations. I'm in a very tough state in life now. I'm leaving the church for 4 years. I'll see you in 4 years. I'm just as religious. I'll be back in 4 years. So they all asked my brother, why don't you tell your rabbi you're taking a break from the religion for 4 years, you'll be back. You believe. Just tell him you're going to work on Shabbos. Come on, you have to make ends meet. You have to study. You have to keep, you came to college. You want to succeed, don't you? How are you going to succeed if everyone else is working a 7-day work week and you're not? Doesn't work that way in Judaism. So, it's not easy. And on the surface, it's not attractive. So the first thing we're assuming is that if someone comes to become a ger, and up until recently that also meant circumcision, which up until recently was a very, very painful process, and still today some people have complications. It doesn't always go cleanly. No one's guaranteeing that it'll be a pleasure, it'll be a breeze. That in and of itself gave a certain assurance that if people are coming into this, they're sincere. The next step is that the Torah teaches us that we have an open door policy. We're willing to give trust. We are willing to let a person join. And that's phenomenal. If you study history and recognize at what point in history the Torah is saying that we're going to have equal laws for a Jew and a ger, equal status. One of the first things the Torah tells us, in the same parsha, we're still in Egypt. We haven't received the Torah and the Torah is telling us equal status. We have no mitzvahs yet. We just left Egypt. We just have mitzvah of Korban Pesach. What did God tell us? Years from now, you'll be performing this ritual of the Passover. And yet the Torah stresses, and you will treat a ger equally. We don't yet have commandments. Why shouldn't he be equal? No, the Torah says, you have to understand, you're here in Egypt, you were treated as a second-class citizen. That doesn't exist in Judaism. A ger is equal. Equal status. And if you think about it, historically, what the world was doing to people who weren't citizens, and what Judaism is telling us before the people have a state, before they have a Torah, before they have a country, it's phenomenal. So the Torah is given as a gift that if someone wants to get it, he can. And he can gain equal status. Halakhically, in order for a person to become a ger, it doesn't require much. Okay, you're right. It's not exactly equal. It's not exactly equal. We look up to a ger. It's not exactly equal. When someone becomes a ger, we have special mitzvot. There are 24 places in the Torah where the Torah stresses that we have to be kind to a ger. You're right. A ger has special status. It's not exactly equal. We have to give a ger extra respect, extra care, extra help. A ger will need it. Because strategically, a ger is usually on the bottom of the ladder financially. He doesn't have an inheritance. Usually he's going to have a family that will not have a good relationship with him. Usually his family will be pretty upset at him for what he's done. Historically, families have tried to murder people who became gerim, and sometimes they succeeded. We have unfortunate stories in our history that way. Look at the story in the Gruz time of the ger. Look at the stories in the Gemara time of Unkelos, how his uncle wanted to put him to death because he became a ger. And Akila Sager, there are many stories historically about people who became gerim and had it very tough with their families. You cannot expect that your families will accept what you're doing. And financially, the person, everyone else has an inheritance. They have a piece in the land of Israel. A ger does not. It's not easy to manage that way. The Torah keeps stressing, help him out. You can't enter a holiday without adopting, helping a ger. He's supposed to be part of your family because the Torah expects that when a person joins a new people, as much as we will give him honored and revered status, he still is going to have a hard time financially. That's an expectation that's underlying in the Torah. When the Torah describes those that are going to need financial assistance, the Torah says the widow, the orphan, and the ger, and the levy. Those are the examples of people who we expect to be at the bottom rung socially. At the same time, we don't look down at them. A ger has preferred treatment. In many ways, we have a special mitzvah to make a ger happy when it comes time for the holiday. We have a special mitzvah to incorporate him in our family, to invite him, to give him special treatment. The Torah stresses the special treatment we're supposed to give the ger. We have a special mitzvah, va'ahavtem et ha'ger, to love the ger.
firstly we have to love him like a fellow Jew, and then we have a special mitzvah to love him because he's a ger. A ger gets preferential treatment in Judaism. He not only gets equal treatment, and aside from that, a ger has the same rights as a Jew. There is a point where maybe a ger, regarding prophecy, we have the Kuzari is of the opinion that a ger cannot attain prophecy. That's a technicality, so to speak. His children can gain prophecy, and not everyone agrees with the Kuzari. That's the Kuzari's opinion. But what? His opinion. But what? Okay. Neither can anyone outside the tribe of Judah. Neither can anyone outside the family of David. That's not. What? There are a lot of things a ger could be. You weren't here for the beginning of the class, so we began by saying that there were only people present who were in the gear process, and as such we said we would take advantage of it and discuss the gear process. And that is why we're discussing a ger and a Jew, because that is the whole purpose of our discussion. But now that we have a full class, we'll go over to our regular class. But I would like to end with just addressing the practical aspect. Today, when a person comes to the gear process here in the state of Israel, so the gear process is divided into two things. There's the halachic aspect and the bureaucratic aspect. And never the twain shall meet. So they do meet, but it's not exactly the way we would like it. In all things that have to do with the public, you have to make a certain compromise between what's practical and what's ideal. So the bureaucratic process, that's bureaucracy, and that can cause a lot of agmat nefesh, augmentation, and suffering, and it's unfortunate, but a lot of it is necessary. The halachic process basically boils down to two things. We assume that a betin, as you said, cannot test a person about his sincerity. And that is why the betin wants a person to spend time studying somewhere and come with their recommendation. The betin is banking a lot upon our recommendation. You should know that before we give recommendation, we sit and discuss it. We think about it. Where is this person holding? Is it good for him? We sit and think, are we really doing this person a favor? Is this the best thing for him? And is he ready for it? We don't want, like you said, unfortunately, there are cases where a person becomes a ger and he doesn't live up to it. And that's unfortunate, because now he's spending his whole life sinning. His ger process was sincere, he should have remained not a ger. He would have been better off. So we want what's best for a person. The last thing we want is that a person should do ger and then regret it. If he regrets it, so then let's detain him a little bit. Let him think it through better. Let's point out to him how difficult it's going to be. No one's saying it's easy. We're going to help a person, but there's a limit to what we can help. We try to help as best as we can. And so the betin is banking upon our recommendation in a large way. They know that they can't test the person's sincerity. They try speaking to a person, understanding where he's holding, understanding his views, trying to see if the person is being sincere with them. And at the end of the day, they know they can't do beyond that, and Allah doesn't expect them to do beyond that. But because we want what's best for the individual, we're not just doing the dry halacha, so the betin will insist that a person has studied with a rabbi in an institution and then get that person's recommendation and understand from that person where the person is holding. And a lot of what they're doing is based on that. And if they don't have that, then they're going to have to spend more time understanding where the person is holding. That's why it's so important. That's why the Beit Din often wants to know, where have you been studying? How long have you been studying for? And from the way you answer, they're trying to understand if this is really what you want. But of course it's not a perfect process, and it doesn't aim to be. We're putting the responsibility on the person. We're not taking responsibility. We're going to try to do it as best as possible, but at the end of the day, the person is responsible for his life.
I have another question that's kind of the opposite of the process. Why do you go first?
The question is, should we continue this?
Yeah.
Or maybe...
Why not?
Okay, yeah. I thought we would have a private class for Gary, and I didn't think
that. Okay, but after my question, please take a question. Well, my question is, I'm just studying here now, and since I'm here, I start realizing how less I know. And every day, I start to discover that I knew even less than I already knew. And so far, it, yeah, okay, I had this book, when it was overwhelming, and at the same time, it's making me happy because it took the value, it took the force that gives me for the rest of my entire life. At the same time, I have a question. For example, I cured tourists, but yeah, I did it in 8 months, I did it in 12 months. And at the same time, I'm thinking, like, that shouldn't be the main thing. I think it's important to learn and study as much as you can and be the person as good as you can be.
Sorry to interrupt you. I see a lot of the people walked in wet. Maybe we should turn on the heater so you guys don't get ill.
I think we're okay. Are you okay?
I'm worried about him. I see him sitting there shivering. You want some tissues to dry yourself off?
I want to be the best Jew I can be. I want to be like a jewel for the Jewish people. I want to be the Jewish people to be happy with me. I want to be good for Israel. I want to. And actually, it's not. But I try to do what I can. So my question is, when is it enough? Where do I go? I think it's fair to say that the 2 years is even a short time for me, or maybe 4 years, or at the same time, I have my ideals, want to get married, want to get a job, want to. But so I was asking myself this question, like, what can be good enough to join Am Israel? And
yeah, that's the one thing that's a big enough question. Let's deal with a lot of aspects of that. First thing, I want to reiterate one point that we said a minute ago. I think the biggest mistake that Gerim makes is that after they do the mikveh, they feel like, I did it. The Beit Din tested me, I know my stuff, I'm a Jew. In truth, they are a Jew. I'm not saying they're not a Jew, but that doesn't mean they can stop there. The biggest mistake is that Gerim finish the Ger process and walk out of here. And a person is not ready after 2 years of study to begin Jewish life, even after 7 years of study. It's a continual process, and a person has to continue growing. And it's a problem because if you tell people you have to study for 10 years, so there are many institutions that will let them do it after 7 months or 3 months or a year, like you're saying. So it's a balance between what's practical and on both fronts. We want people to study, and we want people to come. We don't want people to go to these institutions that will recommend them after 7 months, and they really know much less than they know here after 7 months. So we have to try to give as much as we can and keep it balanced. When you remember that halakhically, you don't really need to know so much to go for gear. The amount you need to know, as far as the dry halakha goes, you could learn in a week. The basics of faith, the basics of halacha, because gear is not based upon your knowledge of halacha. It's based upon the fact that you've studied enough, they have a general idea. You know, on Shabbos, you don't drive a car, you don't turn on a light, you don't cook. You know that there are laws of family purity, a couple can't eat together whenever they want, there are parts of the month yes, parts of the month not. You know that you can't eat anything you want, you know you have to make a blessing before you eat. You can learn all those basics in a week. And then you learn the basics of Jewish philosophy, the 13 principles. You don't need more than a week to know that. But that's not the point. We want a person to know enough to make an intelligent decision, and we want a person to know enough to start living Jewishly. And we know that most people after the gear do not learn. It's the biggest mistake, in my opinion, but what can we do? I am for making people sign contracts that after their gear, they're going to learn another 3 years. That's what I feel should be done. But who am I? I'm not in the rabbinate, I'm not in the chief rabbinate making any decisions here. I have no say, but in my opinion, it's a big mistake that this is the way the process is working, because people walk out of the gear and they know very little, just like you said, even after 2 years, how much can a person really know? And they really need to keep studying, and there's no way to enforce that. As far as when is a person ready to join the Jewish people, so after a person has learned basic concepts, and a person has learned the basic philosophy, and he knows he wants to join it, he's ready. The rabbinate today demands that he knows more. So he has to learn more practically in order to pass the test. But for a person to be ready, he has to know enough to make an intelligent decision. I sometimes have Gerim who send me emails, people in the gear process, and they ask questions. And everyone knows, in the Machon also, you guys are new, that my policy, according to Halacha, is that up until a certain point I'll answer, at which I say, now's not the time for that. After your gear, I make a deal. Everyone who's in the gear process, you guys haven't heard this yet, anyone who finishes gear once can have a set learning with me once a week. I learn, everyone who passed the gear process here has had the option to learn with me once a week, private, one-on-one, and that's to make up for all the times that I won't answer you during the gear process. Because to a certain point, I'll answer you, and after that, that's it. At that point, finish your gear, and then we'll talk. Because there's no point. We don't go into all the details beforehand. There's no point. You have to know that the halacha will not answer all of your questions. You're never going to know everything. I don't know everything. No one knows everything. You have to accept it because this is what God said and this is the tradition we have. You want to accept it, good. You don't, also good. You're entitled to do whatever you want. But there's a limit to where the questions are entitled to go. Before the gear. After gear, I do one-on-one. I'm telling you, anyone who finishes gear here, the guys know it. Usually the guys leave. I haven't canceled it on anyone. It was always them who didn't have time. It's difficult to find convenient time, but I'm telling you guys the same thing. Anyone who wants, after you finish your gear process, as long as you want, as long as I can.
One question. I don't really get with what you mean with until a certain point. Does it mean that you don't get answers on some questions, or
people very often, a person came to me, a guy who was in the gear process, and he comes to me and tells me a neighbor came to him on Shabbos, and the neighbor wanted to do certain things that were desecrating the Shabbos. Is he allowed to let the neighbor do it?
Yeah.
And the neighbor was a Jew. So I told him, look, you didn't finish your gear process. What do you care? You're asking me details in the halacha. You don't need to know that now. Do you know the basic 39 laws of Shabbos? Do you know the basic 39 halachos? Why should we go into all the technical details? That's irrelevant. Know the basics. Learn what you need to know. Do you know the 13 principles by heart? Do you know the basics of the origins of the Torah, our history, Sinai, the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, the basic story of Tanakh? If you don't know that, don't ask me details about the laws of Shabbos. That doesn't interest me. If we have 5 minutes to talk, I'd rather tell you something else. It's more basic. After a person finishes the gear process, I'll still make the same recommendation, but I'll dance according to his tune more. If a person wants to know specifics about this, about that, fine, I'll try to answer him. Before a person finishes the gear process, I think it's ridiculous. I'm not willing to go into 101 details when a person doesn't know basics. That's not what a person should be learning now. After a person finishes gear, I'll dance according to his tune. He wants to learn this, that. I'll ask my recommendation. I'll say the same thing. Learn the basics. Don't go into the details right now.
Is there any problem when your gear has a child?
One second. He's waiting for something. He's waiting for something. We'll get to that. So we covered it?
Not totally, because I still don't know what's good enough for you. Personally.
What does it mean good enough for the Jewish people? A person that wants to help the Jewish people is good enough for the Jewish people.
Okay.
Now a person has to know enough to be fit to join, but that's not a... As far as the Jewish people are concerned, a person is a good person and wants to do good, welcome. Obviously he has to... If he wants to subscribe to religion, then he needs to know about the religion and decide if he wants to subscribe to it. And again, our recommendation is going to be a good non-Jew. It's always going to be our recommendation. It's easier, it's more practical. You could be a very good person and not do gear. And we've had people who came here, studied for a month, 2 months, a year, and got up and walked away. Said, this is very nice, I value it, I appreciate it, I'll keep studying it as a religion, and I'd rather stick to my way of life. Which I understand fully. And we don't respect those people the less for it. Yeah, David. You don't have to, if you want to.
The question is not a good question because it's true idea that you know, not a good answer. So, we know in order to be a citizen of Israel, you don't need to be Jewish. There is a non-Jewish citizen.
You're talking about the state of Israel?
Yes.
Okay.
However, it's a Jewish state.
It aspired once upon a time to be a Jewish state.
That has been a quandary.
When the Prime Minister threw down the Bible in the Knesset and said, this book will not define how I run the country, you could no longer call this country a Jewish state.
Yes.
Yeah.
This
is a state that once upon a time aspired to be Jewish. It is a state that has many Jewish citizens. And it is a state that hopefully will have a majority that wants it to be Jewish and will be Jewish. But at present, you cannot call a state that funds things that are against the Torah a Jewish state. You could call it a state that has many laws that are Jewish, and Be'ezrat Hashem will be a fully Jewish state. When the state wants to adopt, because Ben Gurion has a daughter who married, he has a son who married a non-Jewish woman, and therefore Ben Gurion wants to adopt the ruling in the state that it's enough to have a father who's a Jew in order to be Jewish, it's a little difficult to call that law a Jewish state that's against halacha. Ben Gurion had a vetted interest in having his grandson be recognized by the state as a Jew, in spite of the fact that that grandson was born by a non-Jewish woman. It's a little difficult to call that a Jewish state. There are things that the state does that go with halacha. There are things that the state does that does not go with halacha. The state is not what defines what the halacha is. The state will hopefully one day be a fully Jewish state, and that is our responsibility to procreate and to influence and try to bring people to understanding that this is the best way to go. Even when the state will want to adopt Jewish laws, it is limited because Judaism is not prepared at present to deliver a set of laws according to halacha that a state could really run by. That is a task which Rav Waldenberg tried to undertake, the Tzitzel Yezer Zatzal just passed away, and many others have tried to undertake. It is very difficult. Even in the time of the Second Temple, the state wasn't running according to halacha, and the rabbis had a hard time enforcing a state according to halacha, and that was during the Tannaic period. In our day and age, to have a state that will run according to halacha is very difficult. And when we'll have a state running according to halacha, the Chazon Ish wrote, we will not enforce by force the halacha. Meaning, if a Jew will want to desecrate Shabbos, we will not stand in his way. Contrary to what people think, and that is what Chazon Ish wrote, because it is counterproductive. Kfiyat datit, as it is known, is usually counterproductive. We will try to attract people to learning. We might install an educational system which is pro-Torah. Unfortunately, the current educational system is lacking. There are many things that would be different, but it is not very feasible in today's day and age, until we have a rabbi who's big enough who can give ruling how to do it, to create a Jewish state in truth that will run by halacha. It's not a simple task. It's not just opening the Chumash and doing what it says. Just a second, one second.
It seems like I completely agree with what you're saying, and I'm an eternal optimist in that, of course it's not the way it should be, but I think the Beit Din should be responsible for not only the Derech Office, but the enforcement of Jews who are not Jewish. I continue after my time in Sinai, after spending that time in Sinai, I continue to come up with this. My personal adage, that I don't think the Arab problem is a problem with the Arab.
I agree.
The Arab problem is not an Arab problem, it's a Jewish problem.
For sure.
The Arab problem is a Jewish problem because it's Jews who are not Jewish.
There's a lot more to it.
And when Jews are really Jews, when they fulfill every aspect of being Jewish, it's not going to be an Arab problem.
I agree. Are you? 100%. We started having a class on this.
So it seems like the Beijing would say, hey, listen, you are Jewish, but you're not observant. And so, I'm not saying enforcing being Jewish. I'm saying, a girl asked me the other day, she said, why don't you wear your tzitzit at night? I said, because it's night. And I'm not bound to wear a tzitzit at night. She said, really? And I said, you're Jewish. You don't know? You grew up here. I mean, it seems like there's an educational break somewhere.
Okay.
And my question,
I didn't hear questions yet. I heard everything you said. I didn't hear questions.
No, I mean, I'm saying, it seems like we should be doing more as a Jewish.
Question is, what about the individual? The individual has a responsibility to do the best he can. Slowly we're advancing.
The individual is part of the cause.
Yeah, what you see in Amona, that they're beating religious Jews mercilessly, is because, unfortunately, the country is divided into secular Jews and Jews who are observant, and the country from the top down is recognizing that slowly we are taking over demographically, politically, and in all institutions. Slowly, but we are. And people feel threatened by it, understandably so. And Amona was just one outbreak. Unfortunately, the situation is continuing. The fact that Shinui got so many votes shows that. Shinui was just based on the claim, the religious are taking over. That was all they had to offer. And they got a lot of mandates. A lot of people who feel this threat. Okay. I think we should switch to Avinyana Bites class, unless there's any important question right now. And I see people are interested. I think this should be a class only for Geirim. We will discuss it between the people in the Geir process. And we'll see. If they choose to have a class with everyone, so we'll try to have a class with everyone. If not, then I think they're entitled to a class on their own. So we'll see.